welcome to the RTE Soccer Podcast, Euro 2020 edition. Mikey Stafford here, and I'm joined by Karen Duggan to reflect on a at times rather insane last 16, Karen, that has left us with a quarterfinal lineup that maybe we wouldn't have predicted, would you say?
Yeah, definitely not. I think because so many teams went through the group stages, you couldn't kind of get a gauge for how the tournament would go. It wasn't just going to be the big boys going through as we anticipated, but that hasn't turned out to be the case in the last 16. It's thrown up some shocks. It's thrown up games that we thought would be good that were damn squibs, and then absolutely electrifying games that were going to extra time and giving us 14 goals in one day. So unpredictable, but that's what you want from tournament football.
It certainly is. I think it's 3 years since we've had a major men's tournament, and I think sometimes you kind of forget how they take over your life and how much, in a lot of ways, how much more enjoyable international football is than club football from a spectator point of view. I think it's because it's such a concentrated, you know, it's every day, three or four times a day, players you're not familiar with, teams you're not familiar with, no matter how much you read up about it. And, you know, as high the quality of the Champions League, the Premier League, La Liga, is not in doubt, but we're familiar with it, and there's a certain routine to it, and there's also a predictability to it a lot of times, which you just don't get in international football. You know, nobody would have seen France go out in the last 16, say the world champions. They looked, their team, their squad is jam-packed with players, but you just, like Switzerland, highly functional, very, very well coached, some great players, but knew exactly what they were doing. And in international football, sometimes that can be enough, can't it?
Yeah, can, and we're very thankful for it. If you were watching three games a day and they were as predictable as maybe the Premier League and the Champions League have become because of how powerful the big teams are with all the money and all the rest of it, but it just goes out the window at international football. And you mentioned the Swiss there, and no one really had much time for the Swiss. They're not a particularly likable team in any way, not one that you watched in the group stages, and we're looking forward to seeing them play. You kind of thought France would have enough attack and flair just to kind of drown out their high functioning team, but it worked out to be the opposite in the end. You kind of knew that the way it was going. They played their socks off. France crumbled in the way that we know that France can, and maybe hadn't thought they would, because they went on to win that World Cup. But they gave us one of the most thrilling games, and when you did just back somewhere over the French to pull something off. The French kind of, they looked like they had it won, or they acted like they had it won when Pogba's goal went in. That typical French arrogance, the celebration, mm-hmm. which was wonderful, and it was what we wanted to see from them. But what we were given from Switzerland was so unexpected that, you know, it really delighted everyone.
It really did. I was looking at it there, so yeah, it's not a lineup. We'll just go through it there quickly mm-hmm. for people. It's Belgium, Italy, Switzerland, Spain, Czech Republic, Denmark, and Ukraine, England. And you'd say, well, I was thinking about it this morning, well, there's two former winners there. Well, actually, there's four former winners, because straight away I'd forgotten about poor old Denmark and Czech Republic, as Czechoslovakia are previous winners as well. So half of the countries left in it have, in some guise or another, won the tournament before. But you would say that from pre-tournament predictions, Belgium, certainly people would have seen in the quarters. People wouldn't have been banking on Spain even, and Italy are now everybody's copyrighted dark horse, and after their first game people were saying they're going to make the quarterfinals, but there was a little bit, you know, they weren't being mentioned in the same breath as say Belgium, Portugal, France, England even, in terms of who's going to win the tournament. So looking at it now, I suppose you'd say it's certainly the harder side of the draw, Belgium and Italy, Switzerland and Spain, and then England. We'll focus on England for a second. We're talking about all the great games, how fantastic it's been. And then yesterday, as I think, following a lot of England soccer journalists on Twitter, and they were like, after the two fantastic games on Monday, they said, it's bound to be 0-0 tomorrow. It's got to go to penalties. And for a long time, it looked like it would. But in fairness to Gareth Southgate, he has his team set up. He has his team set up with six or seven defenders. So he's not trying to win games by a cricket score, but the concession rate shows that they have to be considered contenders here, because they have a rock solid defense.
That's it. And if he hadn't gotten it right, he obviously would have been lambasted by the press. But now he's a tactical mastermind by playing seven defenders.
The fine line, isn't it?
There's such a fine line. And that's what makes it so interesting, because it's certainly not the matches that are making England interesting. It was just one of those games where you were just praying for an early goal, so it might have to open up a bit. I was kind of surprised by the Germans. I thought they'd come good. Obviously, they weren't overly convincing in the group stages. Good win against Portugal, but then Hungary, to be fair, they really contributed to the group of death, even though the three main teams came through. Three of those teams are now gone. So three pre-tournament big boys, as you would say. But yeah, England are highly functional, and they're plodding their way through, and they're nothing to write home about except the fact that they are these star players, and we all know them so well. But right on the easier side of the draw, they haven't had to open up and let the shackles off them. Sterling, who maybe people didn't think was going to warrant his place, given that the attacking talent that they have on the bench, and maybe he didn't have his best season for Man City, but he's become their talisman in the absence of any type of form from Harry Kane. Okay, he got the goal yesterday, but I think he should have been taken off after about 50, 60 minutes. As soon as he had a little knock, I would have used that as an excuse to take him off.
I think a lot of us thought they would. And he actually saw it. It happened repeatedly. Sterling would make a run, beat a man, maybe even beat a second man, and then he'd be on the edge of the box, and he'd look to his left, and he'd look to his right, and he'd look in front of him, and there was nobody there. So he started running laterally across the box. He did that three or four times, and definitely Harry Kane. You have to ask, where's Harry Kane? Why isn't he making the runs he makes for Spurs? But you also have to think, if you're playing 3-4-3, shouldn't the wing backs be like busting the gut to get up on the left and the right of Sterling? For some reason, it seemed repeatedly that Raheem Sterling was the furthest man forward and with very little support.
Yeah, the midfield didn't want to get involved at all. I mean, Rice and Phillips are there to break up play. I don't think I've seen Declan Rice play more than three passes in the tournament.
Not forwards anyway.
No, definitely not forwards. And I think if they had to let the shackles off, he should be the one to make way, because Phillips, at least he's putting himself about. He's a bit more bustling, and he's a bit more kind of pace about him. And then if you had Henderson on the pitch, he brings that leadership quality, but they're not going for that. They're sticking with what they have. And like you say, Sterling at times was isolated, which you just wouldn't expect. But maybe Harry Kane, he plays with the likes of Son and Bale and all of those in Spurs, and they just play a higher up the pitch. They play a little bit more of a possession-based football, whereas now it's all this on the break and hope that Saka and Sterling can kind of create something from nothing. They're not going to get that much support, so maybe win a set piece and get Maguire's head on it or something like that. But I think Grealish did change the game when he went on. I think you could tell that the Germans were very aware that he had the potential to do something. He was involved in the two goals in some way. I suppose the argument then is going to become, instead of playing him with the three guys, it's going to be playing him maybe instead of Saka. Still can't believe that Sancho hasn't gotten any minutes given he's apparently £100 million man for Man United. The Germans were all saying before it that they're delighted he's on the bench. He had a great season for Dortmund. They know all about him and what he could have done. Like, he's paid to get their defender, who would have been marking him as the Mönchengladbach guy. He got himself booked, I think, early enough, and he could have done more damage against a team like that. But it's not happening, but they're there, thereabouts, and you can't really see them not being in the final, given the way the draw has fallen.
Yeah, I think
as much as we want Denmark to be there, let's be honest, I think we're all Danish now, aren't we?
I think we are. Well, I think from an Irish point of view, if it ends up as a Switzerland-Denmark final, we can say, well, we got beaten, but we got
by the best.
Well, out of Europe, two best teams, what can we do? Just finally on England, actually, Jadon Sancho, it seems like Marcus Rashford maybe jokingly confirmed Sancho's transfer to United last night on Twitter. He just replied to someone asked him, announce Sancho, and he just replied, yes. So either he was having a bit of fun, or the longest transfer saga in recent history is going to end. There does with England, as with many areas of English society at the moment, seem to be a bit of a culture war at the moment, that Southgate can't do right. There's people who, that's the first time they've won a knockout game in European Championships in about 50 years, and there's people complaining that, you know, they didn't do it the right way, and we're here complaining about the style of football, I suppose, but as you say, it's working. So now there's still people calling for Sterling to be dropped, supposedly, which you kind of wonder where that comes from. I think that's just a lunatic fringe. Yeah. But obviously the focal point is now Jack Grealish. He has become, you know, he has become that iconic figure now who, as they say, has a better game when he doesn't play than when he does play, because there's just such a clamour for him to come in now. But he did come in last night, and as you said, he made all the difference. He just injected that kind of urgency into their attack, didn't he? And he can spot a pass the way that, very well, actually, you could probably say there's quite a few players in the England squad who can spot a pass, Foden, Sancho, but they're not playing. Jack Grealish is that player who's going to be furthest up the queue with Southgate, and he almost has to start against Ukraine, doesn't he?
I think so. I love watching him play, as much as you hate to admit that as an Irish person. He does have something special about him, something that is lost from a lot of kind of modern midfielders, where they don't want to dribble and take people on. It's all about pass and move, and like you say, that highly functional way what he brings is that a bit of unpredictability, and that's what we're so dying to watch from what we're getting for the first 70 minutes from England. We want something to spark into life, and he's bringing that. And again, whether it's English media hype or whatever, we love the fact that he's now potentially another £100 million man, and he's sitting on the bench, and what a story that is. You've got, if you tot it up, the worth that's on the bench, because I know it wasn't Rashford when they did that kind of who's the most valuable player given in terms of their age and stuff. I think Rashford is right up there, Sancho is up there, Foden is up there with Mbappe and Haaland. I think they're pretty much the top in the world in terms of projected value. So it's just an interesting story, and we're getting, and that's the story as opposed to how they're playing. But again, because we're so close, because they're the teams we support and we're so familiar with these players, it is intriguing as much. It's more about the build-up and the post-match analysis that you're looking at rather than games with England.
Yeah. The other side of the draw then, just quickly, Switzerland play Spain now on the 2nd, which is Friday. Mm. That's an intriguing game, because Spain, they've learned how to score goals, having, you know, for the first half of the tournament been derided for not being able to score goals, and Morata not being able to hit the broadside of a barn with a banjo. They found goals, but they've also discovered strange and unusual ways to concede them. And you just wonder whether Switzerland played their final the other night, or if this team can keep going, because they look like a very good team, Switzerland. They didn't fluke that win over France by any means. For long stages of that game, they played the world champions off the pitch. They're very structured at the back. They're very good at playing the ball through midfield. And Granit Xhaka is obviously the guy who's playing for Switzerland. Is Granit Xhaka's evil twin or something? Because he's not the player we've seen at Arsenal. He's fantastic. They've got great forwards. They've got speed out wide. They're a really good team.
They are. They're solid in defence. Excellent goalkeeper. Xhaka absolutely pulling the strings in there. He became the villain for Arsenal in an Arsenal team that were just going downhill anyway. He kind of became the scapegoat and kind of the figurehead for that, unfortunately for him. I'd say he's Jose Mourinho's dream if he is finalising that Roma deal with him. It'd be interesting to see how they get on together. And Mbolo, kind of one of those players that you mightn't have paid much attention to beforehand. He's got absolute pace and power. And when you think of how porous and fragile that Spanish defense can be, you think that there is potential that they could go and score goals against them. And I think looking at Spain, you wouldn't be surprised if they lost, if they messed up with the way they conceded goals the other night. But they contributed to an absolute thriller, and you're nearly happy for Morata, because he was coming in for so much stick, and he had to be their talisman, their number nine, like Benzema stepping up for France and Lukaku for Belgium. But he's not that type of player. When he plays for Juventus, he has Ronaldo, he has someone else to be the main man, and I just don't know if he handles the pressure of being the main man as well as some of those more kind of arrogant, typical, I'm a top striper in the world, number nine. He's hard working. He absolutely does contribute to the play. He wasn't able to finish earlier in the competition, so I was happy for him to get his goal because the people who were expecting him to score, they're expecting him to be a player that he's possibly not. We saw that in the Premier League when he was there, that he's a confidence guy and he needs players around him to be really operating at a high level as well and contributing to his game. And he wasn't getting that early in the tournament. And when you look at their defence, and I'm just following, say, Ramos on social media, and you look at the shape he's in and just the career he's had and the leadership that he's brought to like the most tumultuous club in the world in Real Madrid. And you look at the little bit of lack of leadership that Spain seemed to have there, and particularly when Busquets wasn't in there, they're just a team of kind of individual, maybe bright spark here and there. You didn't really see any much structure about them.
Yeah.
That kind of lack of leadership on the field, and you just can't believe that he's sitting at home running up hills when he could be on the pitch with them.
And he's not only not selected, Luis Enrique took two players fewer than he was, they allowed two extra players to this European Championship for the squads, and Luis Enrique decided against taking two extra players and left Ramos out. It was completely a pointed gesture. There's something personal there, or he feels he'll undermine him or something, because he could, because he's such a force of nature. But as you say, maybe off the pitch he could be a problem, but on the pitch he would certainly be solving problems for Spain.
I think you deal with it in a major tournament when you know you've got pretty inexperienced defence. Laporte, obviously, he only just switched allegiances. Yeah. And like they're not exactly a gelled group that have been playing together for years. Like the Belgians would say, okay, maybe they've got a little bit old in defence, but because they know each other so well, the golden generation are at that age where now they need to do it. Spain aren't at that, they're more at a transitional stage, so you need a steady presence. And even if off the field there are some problems there, on the field what he brings, he even would have brought goals probably in the first, and he certainly wouldn't have missed the penalties. And you think of the amount of penalties that are getting missed at this tournament from open play, it's insane. Like they came good in the shootout the other day, but like serious, I think over half the penalties have been missed in Spain.
More own goals than there was in every other.
I know, so you just think that steadiness that he would bring, he should be there. It's a mental one for me. So I don't see Spain going on to win it, but they're such a mixed bag. You probably don't know what they're going to bring.
No, that game's very hard to predict.
The Swiss went through. Surprised if Belgium were gone, given the way Italy are playing. We want Denmark to get there, and Ukraine. I think the last night's game would have taken too much out of Ukraine. The injuries, they were dropping like flies in that bit. I just saw at the end. So yeah, it's unpredictable. I hope it stays unpredictable, because it's those underdog games that are giving us something to talk about.
It is, yeah. Just a word then on Belgium v Italy, which is all credit to Ukraine v England. I do think Belgium-Italy is probably the game most neutrals are looking forward to. Belgium didn't wow against Portugal, obviously, and De Bruyne could be gone, and Eden Hazard didn't look too comfortable at training yesterday. So without those two, they do lose a bit of spark. But you think about who comes in for them. There's no question you can't replace De Bruyne, but at the same time, they do have an unbelievable squad of players playing at the top leagues in Europe. And, you know, if Axel Witsel has to slot into your team, is that the worst thing in the world? You know, Carrasco, these guys, they're top class footballers. But Italy are doughty, and Italy have a very good squad as well of non-superstars, a proper team, very well coached, Mancini. It's a fascinating one, isn't it?
Yeah, because I suppose despite the record they had going into it, Italy kind of would have flown under my radar a bit, because I suppose all those players, a lot of them are Italian based, and we probably don't watch as much Serie A. And when we do, we think about Ronaldo and Lukaku and the numbers that they're putting up. But they've been so good to watch, and compared to Belgium, compared to England, who haven't been good to watch, you're kind of looking at the Italians now to bring that excitement to the rest of the tournament. They play very differently to how Belgium were playing. They're more of a high press, high energy team. And against Portugal, Belgium were really kind of feeling Portugal out. They had a good spell at the start. Portugal grew into it, but there was not much to it until that goal went in, and the goal you thought would spark the game into a bit more life. But I don't know, maybe it was De Bruyne going off so early into the second half. And while they have great players to bring on, just the impact of that superstar going off and what he brings to the team, do they maybe lose a bit of belief in their attack? Because I don't think they tried to attack at all in the second half. They were able to soak up the pressure because Portugal weren't as clinical as they should have been, or as you might expect them to be. The subs didn't come on and change the game in the way maybe the England subs would have. You didn't see anything from Belgium in that second half that would make the Italians change the way they've played in any way. I think that that high press was very effective for Denmark. They'll know that. Italy have employed that better than anyone else in the tournament. So it's not that defence can still focus on the number nine. There's a lot of movement there. Their left back has probably been the player of the tournament, and Locatelli, obviously, one of the under the radar superstars who's coming to the fore. He might not even start.
You weren't following Sassuolo this
season. I can't say I was following him. No, so that's the thing. And I think as a neutral watching it, and going for style of play, you'd want Italy to go the full way. But because of the respect you have for the Belgium team as well, I kind of want the winner of that match to go all the way, just because, like you say, it's the golden generation of Belgium, the squad that they have. They're all hitting that kind of 30 mark, 28, Lukaku, and he didn't have a great game against Portugal. Again, shades of United Lukaku, but what we saw earlier in the tournament, what he brings to that team, he's so powerful. And the centre-back pairing of Italy, good. But the centre-back pairing, for Italy, they love defending, so I think that's going to be a really intriguing battle. Like, you still don't see
Lukaku as well. They know what's coming.
Know what's coming, and they'll have that bit of pride. And obviously, you'll have hopefully Chiellini coming back in, that kind of Juventus Inter battle going on there. Yeah. So it'll be really interesting. I think Lukaku will turn it on. I think he'll have to turn it on if Belgium are to progress.
Yeah. Just finally then, Karen, I just wanted to get your, from a personal point of view, obviously it's your first time, analysing a major tournament. And I do believe that there has been a bit of a sea change in terms of the attitude towards women analysing men's football, not just this tournament, but I think it's cemented it because it's the biggest tournament. Obviously, there's yourself, Anya, Stephanie and Lisa on RTE, and Emma Hayes on ITV is getting massive kudos for her. It's almost like people are shocked, like, what, you mean the Chelsea women's manager actually knows about tactics and stuff?
Yeah, and she won the WSL, brought them to a Champions League final, imagine. Yeah,
this woman actually knows stuff about football. How have you found it? And, do you sense the same thing as me, that there is more acceptance of it now, which is a ludicrous thing to even be talking about, but let's not pretend that it has always been accepted.
I'm surprised by how accepted it is. You obviously get the rare comment, or people are commenting on what you wear, or like, oh, you haven't played at that level. How you haven't played men's football. How do you know how to talk about it? Yeah, I was just going to say that would have been a tricky one. but obviously, it's been a great experience for us. And I think fair play to RTE for kind of giving the platform to us in this major tournament, because it would be easy not to, and you probably wouldn't have gotten any stick for not to. But in general, the feedback has been really positive from everyone, and you're in there with guys who are really experienced, and they bring you along the way, and it makes you more comfortable, because at the end of the day, between us all, there's an awful lot of CAFs, there's an awful lot of played under an awful lot of managers, haven't played at major tournaments. We played against the best women's teams in the world, listened to some great coaches along the way, and we're as engulfed in the men's game as most people, because we support the same teams, we follow it on a daily basis. So the knowledge is there, but the opportunity, that was the main thing, and getting to be one of the people selected for that, obviously I'm really, really blessed, really honored. It wasn't something I had thought I would get into when I retired from international. It was just something that kind of came about. Got a couple of women's games, and obviously they invited us back for this, which is great, and long may it continue. I think it does add something, something different. Obviously, you don't see it too much. It's mostly the presenters on Sky and stuff, and seeing that little shift, and seeing the likes of Alex Scott, I think she's paved the way. I think she's excellent as well. And she's kind of taken the stick of being kind of the first woman to do it. I think people are getting more used to it now. So that kind of, I think it was just at the start getting used to a woman's voice and things like that. That's all it takes. But yeah, fair play to everyone. I think all of the channels are kind of recognizing the value that it does bring, having someone like Emma Hayes, Emma Hayes' experience and tactical know-how. That's only ever going to be an addition. So it's a great thing, because there's a lot of guys out there, and you look at some of the quotes that you take off Genus and Michael Owen, and you think, God, yeah, it's definitely worth having Emma Hayes in there, the odd game instead of them.
Were you nervous? Because I've had a few mates text me, like in WhatsApp groups or whatever, and a couple of them have said to me, Karen Duggan doesn't take any prisoners, does she? She's excellent. Like, were you ever a little bit nervous, like, you know, that kind of thing? Like, yeah, well, this is, you know, a team full of Premier League stars, and the manager has done X, Y, and Z, and who am I to be criticizing them? Not because you're a woman, just because, you know,
Yeah.
you're kind of relatively new to punditry. Just to say, you know, that kind of takes a bit of guts and a little bit of, I suppose, confidence and surety in your own thoughts.
Well, I think you get into a game and you just have your opinions. Like it would be, it's like when you're at the start, yeah, I think maybe a little bit more reserved because you don't want to say anything controversial, but at the end of the day, you need to analyze what's being put in front of you. And if it's a dull game, you can't oversell it. The people at home are watching the same game as you. You can't hype something up that's not there. If someone's not playing well, you say they're not playing well, it doesn't make them a bad player. It's nothing is ever going to be a personal attack. And obviously some people are fans and they won't take it well if you criticize their player or whatever, but again, it's just you watch what's in front of you. I'm not really on social media that much, so if someone doesn't bother me. So yeah, no, but like we all love football and we can all see what's in front of us. So you just kind of see what you see and you join in with the guys. They're obviously doing it a long time. They know their stuff and yeah, there's no point in pandering to certain players. It's not like I'm gonna run into Jack Grealish next week or I'm gonna run into Southgate. So I don't think there's
Mbappe will
any
be down the
fear in
shops
that.
with
Yeah, I don't
you.
think so. So I don't think that ever kind of plays on your mind, no.
No. Well, look, I've really enjoyed your punditry, and not just because it's on RT. I just think it's been very, very entertaining. So you say it as you see it. So yeah, in a word, who's going to win this tournament?
Belgium.
Okay. I think that's a smart bet. I'm not ruling out
Yeah.
Denmark though. I'm not
Oh,
ruling
I'd
them out.
love it. I just love it. I would.
The
It would
Denmark
be,
Switzerland final, that's what we all want as Irish
or
people.
even Italy, and then Denmark to go all the way on penalties or something like
Oh,
that.
that'd be pretty good. All right, well, we're all
Another
looking.
14 goal thriller on Friday anyway, and we'll go from there.
We'll take that.
Yeah.
Karen, thank you very much for joining us. It's been very enjoyable, and enjoy the rest of the tournament.
Thanks a million, Mikey.
Yeah.